to a forced lineup. Anybody who might have been hurt by the fires in Ernest's job. Parsky Sarah, Parkup Gimel Posit as well. Here's the Posit. We're talking about where Abram, you know, is trying to convince Ephron to give him the land. Ephron immediately says to him, right, you know, you can have it for free. Don't worry about it. You can have the land just for whatever you want. To which Abram, you know, says, I have already given the money. Right? So just take the money and go. To which Adoni Shmaini, my master, listen to me. Eretz Abam El Shekel Kesef Binyo Ben Chomayi, a land that's 400 shekel. Come on, between me and you, what problem is there? Esmei Yitzchak Kvor. Then you can bury your dead. And post that sign, Vayishma Abram Ofron. Abram listened to Ephron. Vayishko Ofron, Ephron is a Kesef Shibir Biyos Nevi Echeis. And Abram weighed out for Ephron the money that he had spoken to in the ears of Ben Echeis. Abam El Shekel Kesef over La Socher. The 400 shekel Kesef, which was over La Socher, able to be spent by any merchant, able to be given over by any merchant, and that's the idea behind it. So Rashi says, Bini ubein cho mahi, between me and you, what is it over here? He says, what does it mean? Between two friends like us, two loved ones, right? What's 400 shekel kesef, right? If I ask my good friend, my brother, for 400 shekel kesef, of course he's going to give me that, right? Why wouldn't he give it to me? Just give me that amount, and that's that. So point out that Sosefes Brachon Binin Ariel. I might have thought differently. If I would have looked at this passage, I might have thought to myself, and I would have said, between honorable people such as ourselves, Beinil Beincha, 400 shekel kesef to people like us. I'm wealthy, you're wealthy. Between wealthy people like us, come on, what's 400 shekel kesef? But the problem with that is, then it shouldn't be Beinil Beinecha, meaning Ephron saying between me and you. Ephron, without a question, was more honorable than Abram Avinu. There's no question about the opposite, right? Abram was no question more honorable than Ephron. I was just checking to see if you were paying attention. Abram was more honorable than the rest of you weren't. Abram was more honorable. So it shouldn't have been Bini Ubeincha between me and you. It should be Beincha Ubeini between you and me, because you're more chashiv than I am. It should be such a thing. So it must be that it's not referring to their chashivus. It's referring to their friendship. And the idea is Bini, I know that I love you and I'd give you 400 shekel for free. Ubeincha, and I'm pretty sure you're my friend also. And you would also give me 400 shekel kesef. And that's the line, Bini Ubeincha Mahi, of what it means by 400 shekel kesef. But the Rashbam says a little bit differently. Ephron was saying this land happens to be worth 400 shekel kesef. That's how much it's worth. But between me and you, that's nothing. And therefore, I'm willing to give it to you for free. Ephron realized that Ephron really didn't want to give it to him for free, so he silently counted out 400 shekel kesef and gave it to Ephron. And Ephron's like, thank you, and grabbed it and then took it. I mean, Ephron's like, yeah, whatever. It's only 400 shekel kesef. I mean, what's that, right? What's that? As if he's saying it's not that big of a deal, but Ephron understood he really wanted the money, and that's that. Now, the Ramban says something very similar to the Rashbam. The Rashbam says this was the value of the field. The field was actually worth 400 shekel kesef. The Ramban says either Ephron or one of his parents bought this field for that amount of money. Or everyone knew the value of their field back in the day. This wasn't something where you just made up a value of the field and you let it be. Everybody understood this was the value of the field. Or he was grossly exaggerating to show how great of a gift he was willing to give Abram Avinu. And I think that third one is the more correct in this sense. The first two, like the Rashbam, are going in pshat. This is worth 400 shekel kesef. Or you could say it's like, man, I would even give you a 400 shekel kesef field. Not that this is worth 400 shekel kesef, but I'd be willing to do it. That's how much I like you. But not that it actually was worth. Either way, he ended up paying that amount. The Er Yosef says, he explains that Ramban a little bit more. He says, look, even a field that would be worth 400 shekel kesef, I would gladly give you because you're such a good friend of mine. Now again, Ephron is a used car salesman. They were not friends. They never were friends. They didn't like each other. And this is no offense to any used car salesman out there, but you know who you are and you know what you're like. Because I bought cars from you and I know what you're doing to me. So either way, it's like, yeah, we're friends. Come on. I'm only giving this deal to you. No one else would I ever give this deal to. No, you know what that means, right? Yeah, you're getting this deal. Nobody else is getting that deal over here. To which Abram Avinu turned and said, I get what you're saying, but I hear what you're wanting to say as well. I get you want to have 400 shekel kesef in this field. No problem. This is what I'm going to be. That's the idea. And that's why Targumokos, who also says this field was worth 400 shekel kesef, was more like this. Ephron was saying, if it was worth 400 shekel kesef, that's what I would give to you for free. But Abram Avinu understood what it's going to be over here. And that's pshat. That's the idea. The Sforno says it was a question of a credit card. He said, I'm willing to give it to you on credit. You take it for now and just give me the money later. To which Abram Avinu said, I'm not paying the money later. I'm giving the money right now. Halachically speaking, you should know, when paying for a grave, when dealing with a grave, and Chas Shalom, we should never have to deal with this, but it's the reality of life, and unfortunately there's Misa in the world, a person should never be buried in a grave that has not been paid for. Now, that might be an issue. You know, it's a lot of money to bury somebody, especially in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars. It's a lot of money to be able to bury somebody. But nonetheless, the pshat is that Avram surprised him by paying the money at the moment, because usually you pay on credit. You give a little bit now, a down payment now, a little bit later. But Avram said, no, I want everything paid for right now. And halachically speaking, that's what you're really supposed to do. Noah, what were you going to say? In America, what do you mean? Usually people pay by credit card.
In the East Coast, you pay short.
Oh, that's true also. You pay the show or whatever it is. But when it comes to a credit card, that might be considered full payment right there at that moment, as opposed to whatever it is. I'm sorry? Yeah, that is true. So in other words, it's already paid, so to speak, and that's why it's going to be okay, and that's the idea behind it. Says the Malbim, Avram was taking no chances here whatsoever. He was expecting Ephron to get up years from now and say, I didn't receive the money on time, I was expecting that to be the down payment, and I wanted to get more later on, right? Or, I never thought you were permanently burying her there, I thought I was just lending the space for you. Avram wanted none of that later on. He wanted this to be Sarai Aminu's burial place forever, says the Malbim. Therefore, he said to him, I am overpaying you publicly. I'm giving you 400 shekel kesef, even though that isn't the value of the land. I want everyone to know that there are no claims on this in the future. And Ephraim was so happy at what he received. And that's why the puzzle goes on over and over and over again, that there was a kinyan. Everybody was happy with it. The idea was like that. That's how the Malbim puts it over here. Tom Bidas, Rav Sturmbach, says, Ephraim had a legitimate reason to be worried over here. Ephraim had no idea what was going on with this cave. How did he not know what was going on with the cave? Says the Yalkut Ravain, every time Ephraim wanted to walk into the cave, a demon who looked like a murderer appeared at the front of the cave and chased him away with a big knife. So Ephraim had never been inside the cave. When Avraham wanted to buy the cave, he's like, sure, deal with the murderer yourself. But there was no shade. There was no real murderer there. It was just somebody trying to get Ephraim out of the cave. Why are you trying to get Ephraim out of the cave? You're trying to get him out of the cave because Adam and Chava were buried there and Ephraim didn't deserve to be wrong there. Destroying is considered that. Now, I know what you're going to think. You're going to think, what about the Kruven that are standing outside of the Gan Eden, which are standing with the line of Kharim Mishapakas? What's that? Rashi says right there, there were Malachi Mashkis. There were angels of destruction. Meaning those Kruven were a form of demon that were really destroying, and therefore it's okay. So, great question, Noah. I appreciate that. That's a good question. Yeah.
How would he have known that was out of Kruven?
He probably wouldn't, but he would have known it was a special cave. It would have been a light radiating. They might not even have been really dead, as these Sadiqim, we call them, they're really just sleeping. It would have been something different, and that's why Ephraim didn't deserve to see what that was. I'm sorry? Yaakov, you know, was way later. It was Ephraim. That's what you mean by that. Yaakov, you know, low mace. That's a different issue. Yeah, that's a good question altogether, but that's not. I'm sorry? Yeah, in the double part of the cave. That's true also. Not a dead giveaway, because there were giants back in the day, so it's not a complete giveaway. Dead giveaway, that's good. I didn't mean to say it that way. Ephraim was known as Ben Tzohar. If you take the letters of Tzohar and rearrange it, it becomes the word Rotzeach, and it's the gematria of shade. So that would be the idea why, right, why you'd have somehow, right, I guess you could say Rotzeach, by the way, you'd have to add on the four letters, but that's the idea why you'd have a shade dressed up as a murderer referring to Ephraim over here. So how did Avraham even know about this cave? What happened? So that's an awesome medrash. The medrash says that when Avraham was getting the three cows for the three malachim, right, he shechted the first two cows, everything was all good. The third cow was Raphael, who dressed up as a cow. These questions should not be asked. We're leaving it like that. I'm sorry? Raphael was there, but Raphael dressed up as a cow and ran away from Avraham. You know, Avraham was like, what? I'm not losing a cow. He started running after the cow. The cow led him to Maariv Machpelah. He stood outside the cave, smelled it, realized that it smelled like Gan Eden, knew that special people were buried inside that cave. I'm sorry?
Hey,
you can't do more than one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that question. But this ends up being what the Medrash says. He ended up going right in front of the cave itself, right, realized that it was a special cave, and said to himself, I am going to be buried in this cave. Me and my wife are going to be buried in this cave. Then, by the way, when he tried to shecht Raphael the Malach right there, Raphael disappeared, because not really a cow, right? right? And he's like, oh, and that's why it says Ben Buckwasher also, because he made a cow through Sefer Yetzirah that came out, and that's the one that he gave over to the Malachim. That's an unreal medrash that's brought down by the different Midrashim. But anyway, regardless, that's how he knew where this burial spot was. If everyone ever found out that Adam and Chava were buried in this cave, you better believe he's going to come back and say, no, I wanted billions for this cave. He wanted to make sure that no one would ever have a claim on this cave ever again, and that's why he overpaid. Again, a real reason why he'd have to overpay to make sure that he would know, even if he would know what he was selling, he would go, well, I was paid well for this. I'm okay with this. That's the idea behind it. The Reb Chaim Knievsky says, and this is a pella to me, I didn't know this. Ephron, you know who Ephron was? He was the son of Arba. Who is Arba? Arba was the giant who created the city known as Kiryat Arba, right by Hebron. The area near Hebron was Kiryat Arba. Ephron was his son. He was the one that was son. He was also known as Anak. Why Arba is known as Sochar, because Ephron ben Sochar, I don't know. But Arba was Sochar, and he himself was the Anak. He was a giant, and the father of Sheshai, Achimon, and Talmai, the famous three giants that the Meraglim saw when they came into Eretz Yisrael. That was Ephron. Ephron's kids, I should say. Ephron was the owner of the entire city, let alone that area. And therefore, Avinu went to him and said, you can't bury yourself here anyway, because you're a giant, and giants don't fit in the cave. They didn't know about Adam and Chava yet being folded up and being fit inside this cave. And therefore he said, you can't be fit inside this cave itself. You can't do it. And therefore he got permission not only from the city's inhabitants, not only from the owner, but from the city ruler, the person who was in charge of the cave. He made sure that that was going to be over there. That's what ended up happening over here. It's an amazing, amazing idea. The Chidah said, everyone actually did complain. He did complain. After he was given the 400 shekel kesef, at some point later on, he came back and he said, I'm so sorry, here you go. And he ended up giving him whatever it was that he wanted. The Bnei Chais insisted, all you're going to get is 400 shekel. You're not getting anything more than that. And that's what ended up happening, was getting rid of all the issues. So how much is this 400 shekel kesef? How much was it altogether? So I did a little bit of a cheshbon. Miyamloi says a shekel in this case is the weight of a sella, possibly a little bit more. In the end, he says 400 shekel kesef in the word terms of sella is 480,000 grams of silver. 480,000 grams of silver. So I looked it up online. The price of a gram of silver right now is $17. So you do a quick cheshbon. Of 480,000 grams times $17 each is $8,160,000 for this cave. That's how much money you would have paid. And that's in yesteryear money. We're not talking about inflation, etc., but the idea of how much it would be over there. The Chassam Sofer says that the heat goes with the Rashbam, that the 400 shekel was the actual price of the field, but the 400 shekel kesef did not require to be tevuin. It could be like regular silver pieces, but it didn't have to be actual spent money. That was the chiddush, that over here, something extra was given, that it had to be tevuin. It had to be something special, inflated many times over, and that's why it was worth so much more, and that's that. Okay, we're going to talk about two different things. Why did Ephron offer 400 shekel kesef, and why is Ephron missing above? Every part in the parsha where it says Ephron's name, there are three exceptions to this rule, but one at the very end when it says, by Yishkol Avram la Ephron, when Avram gave the money to Ephron, it says Ephron without the vav. Why is Ephron's name written without a vav, and why was it 400 shekel kesef, and is there a connection between those two ideas? We're going to give all together, I think it's seven answers, maybe eight answers to this first one. Rashi says the vav is missing. Does anybody know why? Look at this guy. It's like you have a chumash right there in front of you. Tzadikim, say a little and do a lot. Rishayim, say a ton, and they don't do even the little bit that they suggest. So everyone was like, yeah, I'll give it to you for free. And then, yeah, 400 shekel kesef, and it better be good money. I got to address your money. So the vav, it's not the vav necessarily, but it's the letter missing that showed that when they finally do something, they're missing what they're supposed to do. That's the idea behind it. He rejected what he's supposed to be over there. So it's interesting. Hey, it's interesting because Aaron and Ephraim and Yaakov never have a vav by their names. You ever see Yaakov's name with a vav? Five times. It'll say Yaakov's name with a vav. Aaron is only mentioned with a vav twice in all of Chumash. What's the pshat? Why do they not have a vav in the end over here? Because the norm is for them not to have a vav. But the norm for Ephron is to have a vav. Therefore, we can darshan on Ephron. But by them, we're going to darshan why are they added on with a vav over there. Bala Turim says Ephron is the gematria of, anybody want to guess that, without a vav. Ephron is the gematria of 400, which is the gematria of Ra'ayin, because he was a terrible person who was always trying to lie and trick others. That's all he was ever trying to do. The Kli Yonker says the reason why Vav is because somebody who gives tzedaka is blessed with six brachos. It's a Gemara Bava Basra that says you get blessed with six brachos altogether. If you're stingy, you lose the six brachos. Since Ephron acted stingily, and I don't know if that's a word, but he took away his tzedakah that he was willing to give to Avram Avinu, he lost the six brachos, and the six is represented by the letter. Very good. That was good. I think I led you into that, but that's exactly it. Tov ayin hu yivorach. If you are good, you have a good eye, you get blessed. The word yivorach is with an extra vav for this reason, because you get the extra vav. You get something extra that goes forward. Fine, that's that. Then the Amalei says that Ephron is missing a vav, and his name is the same gematria as Ra'ayin, because he knew how wealthy Avram Avinu was. And he put an ayin hara on all of his wealth. That's why his gematria is ayin ra. He put that ayin hara on it to hope that he would lose everything he had. Anyone who gives an ayin hara to their friend never gains, they lose themselves, and that's the pshat in Ephron. Ephron gave an ayin hara to Avram on his money, he himself lost a vav. That's what ended up happening. He loses and doesn't gain anything. But there Yosef says, I think, do you guys all know this Gemara? Anybody that Avram gave a dollar to, well, not a dollar, but a money to, was blessed. They never lost that dollar. It was like the dollar that would never disappear from their pockets. Anybody know who else that happened to? There's somebody else. And whenever you give a dollar or a coin to somebody, it automatically happens, and they have it for the rest of their lives. It was one of the persons the Gemara says it about. You know who it was? What? Not the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But that is the pshat, by the way, because when a chassid, when a big tzaddik touches your money, it should be gebenched. That's the idea of why the Lubavitcher Rebbe gave out dollars. And there is no question, there are some Chabad people that are unbelievably wealthy, and they attribute it to the bracha of the Rebbe. That's what they attribute it to. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but he was a tzaddik, and he did bench their money. That's the idea behind it. It is quite amazing. I'm sorry?
The Boston Rebbe also did?
Really? Does he really? It's not a dollar, though. It's coins. That's why.
And too many people came by.
That's pretty good. The shot is, if you just got a shekel from Avram Avinu, you'd be rich for life. You would never have to worry about anything. So Ephron, you didn't need 400 shekel kesef. All he needed to do was get one shekel for the field. That's all he had to do. Say, Avram Avinu, I'll sell you the land for one shekel. And that shekel would have been his, and he would have been rich for life. But because he was stingy and asked for 400 shekel, he lost. All the money went through. I'm sorry? Eels. Job, right? He was the one that was out there. I'm sorry?
It was known that, like, Avram could do that?
That Avram, whose money was like that. Anybody who did business, Bob Borchon, the Borchon, those who bless you get benched. The Umekalelkahor. I'm going to curse those who curse you. Meaning, anybody who gets get benched from you will be benched, and that's the idea. He lost that buff, meaning he lost all the extra buffers he would get. He lost, it's Kilut, so to say, you steal the Lubavitcher Rebbe's dollar that somebody has in their pocket. You have a very, very wealthy Chabad guy that attributes everything to the dollar the Rebbe gave him, and you steal the dollar. There's no way that dollar is going to work for you. And that's the pshat in taking extra money from Avram that you shouldn't have taken. There was no reason to do that. Tosefis Bracha says that the foundation of Emunah is to believe in six parts of the world, that God is in charge in the north, the south, the east, the east, the west, as well as up and down, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everybody. When a person loves money, he takes God out of a part of this world. Since Ephraim wanted this money so badly, he kicked God out of the six parts of the world, and thus he's losing the Vav. The Vav standing for the six over there. Then we have that. Now, the Chidah says that Vav stands for life. That's another thing altogether. When we start to learn more about what it means to learn Kabbalah, I guess maybe we can go into the Chidah, but that's not for right now. I will tell you, there's an Alin L'Shabach. A man once came up to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein to tell him about a great deal that he had made. What a great deal of money. What have you done? A new Ole had come to Eretz Yisrael. Let's make an assumption that the guy was from America. The guy from America just wanted to make a deal. He just wanted to buy some land in Eretz Yisrael. So the Israeli, as an Israeli is, so he realized like he could take total advantage of the situation. He knew this guy didn't know the market, didn't know prices, didn't know anything. He sold him a piece of land for five times the value of that land. And he gave it to him. And he went to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein and he asked, right? He was like telling him how proud he was that he had made that deal. And he was acting like a shiloh, like how much meister should I give? Should I give 20% instead of 10%? Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu gave me such a mitziah into my hands, right? Such a mitziah. So Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein said, you're over on Ona, right? Which is overpricing an object and getting more for the object than what it's actually worth, right? That's number one. You can't pay more than a sixth more than the object, and you're getting four or five times more than the object. object is actually 400-500% more than what the prices of the object actually is. He said, number one, you're for sure you're in Russia. He said, that's number one. Number two, he said, you have to go return it right now. You have to take care of that money and go return it right now because you are Ephraim. You are defining yourself as Ephraim, taking advantage of a stranger because you know that he needs something. So you're overcharging him right in that place. Now, I'm not saying that if you're in a baseball game and they're going to charge how much for a Coke, you know, like $200 for a Coke just because you're there and you can't get a Coke from anywhere else. I'm not saying that that's not what you have to do. Obviously, everything goes by where you are at that moment and whatever it is in that time. And you have to ask Shiloh then when to do and what not to. You have to know what is the actual price of an object for someone who's in this line of work. The actual price might be this, but if I'm selling it on eBay or I have a store and I have to sell it in order to make money, then what is the actual price? That's a Shiloh. You go ask a rub on that Shiloh, but this for sure is going to be off. And then comes the grow. I don't know if people actually said it, heard this before, but it's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. The grow says the reason why a bug was missing here is because Ephraim lost out on 600 shekel kesef. He should have had 1,000 shekel kesef, and instead he only got 400, and he lost out in 600 represented by the vav. Why should he have had 1,000? So pshat is, in chop tezayin, perchop posik tezayin, it says that Avramino accepted 1,000 shekel from Avimelech. Anybody know why he took 1,000 shekel from Avimelech? He didn't take money from the king of Sodom, but he did take it from Avimelech, and the reason why he took it is because of Boshes. Why the Boshes? What's the pshat? What did Avimelech do to Avramino? Grabbed Sari Mano and put her in his bedroom so that people suspected that Avimelech was together with Sara. We don't think so, but people thought that way. And for that reason, Avimelech paid Boshes to Sari Mano, the amount of embarrassment that she was there, and it was altogether 1,000 shekel kesef. Says the Gra, Avimelech would not touch the money. He didn't take money from the king of Sodom. He barely wanted to take money from the king of Mitzrayim. That's another issue. By Yehilo, not by Yitzenlo, never actually took the money in that way. Here, by Avimelech, he took the money because of Kavod HaMalchus. The king is giving the money. He felt that he had to take it. I know that was the king of Sodom. Here, he felt that he had to take it over here, but he refused to benefit from it. He didn't want to benefit from any of that money or anything that it was worth. So he always had in mind that this money is going to go straight to a non-Jew. Obviously, I don't mean Jew as in that. It's going to go to somebody who's not part of our system. That's what he said. I don't know who it's going to go to, but it's going to somebody. So he wanted to give it away, and he was willing to give it away. Everyone had such a desire for money. He said, I want 400 shekel kesef. Had he left it up to Avram, he said, Avram, you pay me whatever you think it's worth. Just give me whatever amount of money you want. Avram would have pulled out 1,000 shekel, put it on the table, and said, take this, please. That's Avimelech's money, and it was good money. Gold money that was to ruin, set with the stamp of the king on top of it, said, here's 1,000. But he didn't. He asked for 400. So Avram, counted out 400 and gave it to him. He lost out on the other 600. Therefore, he's missing a vote. That's the pshat behind it. That's the idea. And that's the pasuk in Mishlei. Chof ches chof beis in Mishlei. It says, Nival lo'on ish ra'ayin. The man of an evil eye wanted money so badly. Ra'ayin is the gematria of Ephraim. He wanted money so badly. Lo yoda ki chos yivolenu. He didn't realize that he was going to lose out because of it. Because he wanted the money so badly, he lost out. And Ra'ayin is also the gematria of 400. He wanted the 400 so badly, Ephraim. He didn't realize what he was losing out behind it. That's the idea. Says the Talmud Das, the shot, the lesson that you can learn from such a thing, quite often you'll see people do anything they can to succeed. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll steal, they'll do whatever they can in order to get what they want. In the end, not only do they not gain from what they're trying to do, they lose tremendously from what they're trying to do. That's what ends up happening, says the Talmud Das. That's the lesson to be learned from over here. Sam Sofer, this is a hard one over here. You know what? Let's skip this Chassam Sofer for right now. If you want to look at the Chassam Sofer, it's a hard one. It's a really, really difficult one. It's not one that I would tell over to my kids. Okay, the next one. Why the number 400? Where did the number 400 come from? So the Kliyaker says 400 is the gematria of Ayin Ra. Since Ephra was such an Ayin Ra, he had such an evil eye, the only number that came up in his head was 400. That was a number that appeared to him more than anything else. That's the shot behind it. And we see that number 400 happened all over the place. For example, Esav came with 400 men when he was jealous of the brachos that Yaakovinu took from him. That's the Ra'ayin, not willing to be able to give something, even though he was extremely wealthy at the time. And Ephraim fell, and Esav got everything that he could possibly want. He got the brachos. You'd think you'd give up what Yaakov Avinu got, since you got all the riches anyway. No, Ra'ayin, and he brought 400 people. behind that the Shvatim treated Yosef at Tzadik so badly, it caused them to have 400 years in Mitzrayim. And I realize it really started from Yitzchak, you know, but the number 400 is there. Naval HaKarmeli was in Ra'ayin when he wouldn't give David HaMelech any of the sheep that David HaMelech had helped out with, and therefore David HaMelech came with 400 men to defeat Naval HaKarmeli for not giving him what he was supposed to get. That number 400 appears all over the place as an idea of Ra'ayin. What's up, Natalia?
So why would David have 400?
It's not that he's treating it as evil. 400 is not an evil number per se, but it represents Ra'ayin. When you act stingily, the number 400 comes into play. That's the idea behind what it's supposed to be. Now, in Divrei Yom and Tesnayin Yud Aleph, Rashi says the Gematria of Ephron is 400 without the vote. And therefore, he picked it, so to speak, out of his head. He's like, well, why don't we just do my Gematria? And he chose 400 and off his name in order to go through the Rabbeinu Chaim says, since the name of the city was Alba, he said, oh, Alba Meos, 400. That's a good number. He didn't pick 4. Of course not, right? 400 is what he picked. But he said, it makes sense to be able to do that. The Shach says the word Meos and Amos are interchangeable. So he said, look, you need 4 Amos to bury Sarah. So take 400 for the field. That was the concept behind it, which is over, oh, I'm still over there. I remember Rabbi David Kaplan, those who know from Or Sameach, Rabbi David Kaplan said in a shir, 1997, on this parsha, I remember it, he said that Ephron and Abraham, if you count their names, the middle letter of each is a resh. Resh of Ephron, ayin pei, resh vav nun, and the middle letter of Abraham is resh. Aleph beis resh hey mem. So what did he say? He looked at Abraham, he said, beini hu beincha mahi. Let's look at between my name, what's the middle letter of my name, hu beincha, and what's the middle letter of your name, between me and between you, what is it? 200 and 200? That's 400. Let's go with 400. Of course, Resh and Resh are the highest numbers in Avram and Ephron's name. Everything else is less than that. But nonetheless, he chose that, and that's where it comes out with 400 altogether. Right? That's another reason, something else that comes through over there. The Ben Ish Chai in Adveris Elio seems to say that word. He doesn't say it exactly there. I don't know if Rabbi Kaplan got it from somewhere or he put it up from somewhere else over there. But that's the Pshat, says Adveris Elio. That's why he lost the book. If you lose the book, then the Resh isn't the middle letter of the name. There is no middle letter of the name, and that's the Pshat. Maybe that would change it around something like that.
He wouldn't get what?
Exactly. So that's what messed him up. Like he's showing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, like, but the middle letter isn't a Resh. It's a maybe above. Whatever it would be, it's something. It's a pay, whatever it is. But he didn't get what he was supposed to get. It is funny because 480 is also mentioned around here somewhere. But either way, Rabbi Ephraim says the number 400 was accepted and used by Abraham, and he wanted it as a sign that Eretz Yisrael was 400 parsa by 400 parsa. So he wanted this to be that I will get in the future altogether this amount of land. That's what he wanted to get over here, and that's what it's supposed to be. 400 parts by 400 parts altogether is 800 miles by 800 miles. How have I that Eretz Yisrael was that big? Yeah, it's bigger than that, actually. It would have to be from the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula all the way up to where Syria is, a little bit above Lebanon, and going further into Saudi Arabia. We won't talk about that, but really 400 by 400 parts is a huge amount of land. It's a really, really big amount. Again, 800 miles by 800 miles. So one last one, the grub. This is a mathematical equation. So if you have paper, you can write it down. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit hard. A base saw is a 50 by 50 amos. Everybody got that? A base saw. That's 2,500 square amos. Everybody did the math on that? 50 times 50 is 2,500 altogether. So a base saw is 2,500 square amos. If someone wanted to have a field, which would be 600,000 square amos, you would need altogether 240 bote saw. 240 times 2,500, right, is 600,000. Everybody got that so far? You need 240 base saw. Now, there are altogether 30 base saw in a base core. Okay? So 240 base saw divided by 30. Anybody want to guess that? 240 divided by 30. 8 altogether. So there are 8 bote kor in 600,000 square amos. Again, if you want 600,000 square amos, you would need 8 bote kor, 240 bote saw altogether. Chazal tell us that a Talmud Chacham should be buried with 600,000. 600,000 people present at his funeral. There should be 600,000 people present at the funeral itself. They claim that was it Rebel Yashif that came to close? Rebel Vadi Yosef. That's why Rebel Vadi Yosef came the closest to it. If they got it, they said it was that. What do you really remember?
Way more.
It was way more?
We both forget.
I don't remember.
People that see because it was in that shot.
Yeah. Amazing, absolutely amazing. Makes sense. I don't really know. I think it was because it was Tynus Esther. So a lot of people couldn't make it or weren't able to get in. It was a part maybe. I don't remember exactly what it was, but there weren't a lot of people there. It was, again, it was huge. But I don't know if they made it to 600. 600,000 obviously is a huge amount of people. I mean, we're talking 10 soldier fields. That's what you're talking altogether. It's a huge amount of people altogether. Now, listen, since Matan Torah had 600,000 people, so therefore the funeral of a tzaddik, you have 600,000 people. Every person can stand in a square amma of space. A square amma of space. That's a space that's this big, right? A square about that big. You can stand in that amount of space. So if you want to have 600,000 people at the funeral, you need 600,000 square amos. 600,000 square amos, as we said, was 8 bate kor. A base kor, if you want to redeem it in the Mishkan, if you donated to the base of Mikdash of the Mishkan, a base kor, if you want to redeem that, you'd have to pay 50 shekel kesef for each base kor. Well, Avi, if you need 8 bate kor for 600,000 square amos, and each base kor is 50 shekel kesef. 50 shekel kesef times 8 is 400 shekel kesef. And that's why he asked for 400 shekel kesef, and that's why he's willing to pay 400 shekel kesef. That's a cool shot. Yeah, Ben. Oh, your mind just blew up. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Yeah, that's going to take a while. Yeah. No, it wasn't inflated price. Right? Price. In other words, he paid for a huge field around Maariv Machpelah, 600,000 square amot altogether, in order to get that amount of place. He still asked for a huge amount of money, as opposed to Avraham Avinu telling him what he wanted. It was him doing it. Whether Ephraim meant to do it or not wouldn't make that much of a difference, and that he just actually did it. I don't need to. Okay, we sort of should go into this. I've been telling you guys that it's a little bit inflated. It would have been. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu paid. Does anybody remember Yaakov Avinu also bought land in Shechem? Do you know how much he paid for his piece of land? Now remember, in his land, he was able to have enough land to be able to live, him and his kids, and be able to plant. He had a huge farm on his field that made Me'ah She'arim, right? 100 times of grain, whatever it was. Does anybody know how much he paid for that field? 100 ksita. Now what's a ksita? Ksita is a ma'ah. A ma'ah. And ma'ah, if I have it right down correctly, a ma'ah is, what is it altogether? 1/20th of a shekel. 1/20th of a shekel. Which means that if he paid 100 ksita, he would have paid 5 shekel for his field. A huge field where he was able to plant and have homes and everything, and he paid 5 shekel. Avraham Avinu paid 400 shekel kesef. Says it to his Eves Bracha. That means he literally overpaid. Think about this. He overpaid 80 times the value of his field. 80 times more than what it should have been. Yes, no.
The money was originally Yaakov's was
originally Yaakov's. Yeah, it could very well be. Yeah, there's no question whatsoever. You should know, Yaakov Avinu also overpaid for this. Because remember when Esav had his part, Esav had the rights to one of the burial spots inside Maariv Machpelah. Yaakov Avinu bought it off him. That's why everybody remembers when Yaakov was being buried, Naphtali had to run back to Mitzrayim to go get the star that says that he bought the field. Does anybody remember that, Midrash? So he ran back, and that's when Chushim ben Dan said, what's going on here? Realized that Esav was holding everything up, so he went and he cut off Esav's head. And bravo, everything was all happy. Everybody laughed. Even Yaakov laughed after he was dead. Right? So everything was all happy after that point, right? So everybody remembers that. So over here, Yaakov, you know, paid all the gold and silver that he owned to Esav so that he could take that extra part of the field itself. But it made sense. Because once Avram was buried there, and Sarah was buried there, and Yitzchak and Rivka, and they knew about Adam and Chava, then it was worth all the gold and silver in the world. Ephron was a ra'ayin for asking for the money before he knew what was in it. And Esav was allowed to ask for any amount in the world. I'm just saying, again, this doesn't necessarily, it doesn't apply to any of us. If you knew you had a burial spot, your burial spot was right next to Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. There is no space that's near there. They're buried in different areas. But if you had a spot that was surrounded by Gedolim, how much would you sell that for? So before they took that place, spot there. Before Revel, Yasha, Revel, Shlomo Zalman, and all these Gedolim got that spot, that spot wasn't worth as much. It would have been worth X amount of money, you know, let's say like $10,000. But now that they're all buried around, people would pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to be buried next to those people, next to those great Gedolim, and therefore to give that up would cost more. That's what Esav said. He wasn't a Ra'ayin per se, he was literally getting a good deal on that, and that's Pshat. That's the idea behind it. The last thing we're going to say is from the Chasam Sofer as well. It seems to be that Ephron had a legitimate claim here. Since the land was worth 400 shekel kasef, and he was willing to give it as a gift, he said, Ephron said, now that you're paying me money, I'm actually losing out on this. Why? Because if you wouldn't have paid me that money, I'd be known as the greatest guy in the world. Everybody would say, wow, he gave up the burial spot to Avram, and everybody knew Avram, and Avram was famous. So for everyone to say, like, look, Avram ended up getting this field from Ephron would make Ephron's name well-known by everybody. Everybody would talk about Ephron. Now that you took it and you paid me, Ephron said to Avram, you know, I'm losing out on that fame. I'm losing out on that extra fortune that I could have gotten where everybody would know that I'm a trustworthy, unbelievable guy. He said, because of that, if you're going to have to pay me and you don't want me to give it to you as a gift, then you're going to have to overpay me to make it worth my while for the future money that I would have gained from this venture. He overpaid him because even though it might have been worth 100 shekel, he paid him 400 shekel over La Seicher because of all the future endeavors Ephron might have gotten had he given it to him for free. That's the concept. I'm sorry?
He's like the holy miser.
The holy miser, right. Just in not a good way. But that's the concept of what Ephron was getting over here, that it might have been fair. This is what we're dealing with, guys. What we talked about was simply put with Beini Ubein Chomahi. We talked about Malvin not taking any chances whatsoever. We talked about the bug and what it represents. We talked about the 400 and why specifically 400. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.